And we are, to save time, we're going to record, if you don't mind.
We didn't want to do it without you realizing.
Well, I read over at the library, and I bought the book that Mr. Link got together for the centennial, and I noticed around about the last page in your speech delivered for the opening of the centennial, you said, "We are at the beginning of our true development. Let me give you the next 100 years and the next 100 years a name. As the first has been called a century of progress, let the second be called a century of achievement. We are on the threshold of great achievements for our people in the field of education, industrial development, and economic well-being." Now that I would like to quote in the book, and then I wondered if you would like to elaborate just a little bit on that, along that line.
Well, I think the words, you know, that in the speech, you know, delivered during the centennial. Let me see, I think it speaks for itself, but certainly it needs some elaboration.
I thought we could have a little elaboration of it.
And we feel that this is the year, the next 100 years certainly is going to prove, you know, things, you know, which perhaps the people at one time dreamed about, see, but certainly never got around to doing it or achieving some of the good things, you know, that we and other people had in mind of getting done for the Navajo people. We said that we were well on our way, and I think we've proven this, and we will continue to prove over and over the many things that we can do, not only in the area of education. Certainly education is good, but I think in order to achieve, you know, the many, many good things, the beneficial things that we have in mind, we, I think, need to start with some sort of a base, and the only base that I feel that we can, or that I feel, and my people feel, that we can create, you know, which will bring about the greatest amount of benefits, the greatest amount of return to the Navajo people, in many ways, of course, is an economic base. And I can say that we, I believe, are well on our way in this area.
So we need to feel after having.
That's right. Now, the Navajo Forest Products Industries, back in 1963, was a mill, you know, totally devoted only to the milling of timber, you know, and producing boards. But from that day on, of course, we've worked, you know, on the mill in other areas. The production of, let's say, the ply board. We really haven't gotten into it yet, but we're still working on it. But now I think something else is showing up, you know, becoming a reality, which is the press board, you know, that we've been talking about getting into since 65 and 66. We've placed a terrific emphasis, you know, on getting that particular product, you know, the worked on and produced here at Navajo. And I think we're on the threshold again there, whereby in a year or two, perhaps, or maybe even 3 years, I think this will become a reality. Something else that became a reality, of course, is the bark, you know. In prior years, before 1963, the bark, you know, was taken off of the logs, and it was a waste. They used to burn it. But now, to date, you know, we worked on that particular item, and it's being used. It's being ground or chopped up, you know, in a certain way where that stuff, you know, is being used as more of a decorative a thing, you know, and we're shipping it out. And then, of course, the rest of it is ground, you know, to a real fine material, you know, where perhaps our thinking is with certain treatment, treating it with certain chemical, perhaps we might be able to hasten, you know, the decay which is necessary in the bark, you know, to get all of that different chemicals out of it, you know, where we can use that, you know, as fertilizer. See, this is another thing that we're doing right now. Now, the next thing that we did, of course, is the cardstock plant, you know, that we put in up there. Just the board, you know, when it comes out, and there's usually a portion of it, you know, that is free of nuts and so forth. Now, we put a lot of work into getting the cardstock plant, you know, put in up here. Now they're dovetailing those things in such a way that with the glue, and then of course it's pressed in, you know, and you've seen, I'm sure, you know, the molding and the different things, you know, that are coming out of that particular portion of the operation. So these are some of the things that we're doing, and not only that, we're in a way, you know, thinking of perhaps even treating the pine wood that we're producing up here with some sort of a plastic, you know, in some way, perhaps through infrared treatment of some sort, you know, getting the plastics, you know, to somehow by some treatment of some sort, you know, getting that plastic impregnated into the grain of the pine woods that we're producing up here, whereby we can come out with a board, you know, that'll be as strong as steel, see, and will last. You see, these are some of the areas that we're thinking of getting into, see. And of course, industrialization of the Navajo Reservation, we feel that now that we've proven, you know, that it can be done by getting General Dynamics and Fairchild and the Bostrom and the Bostrom Electronics plant at Page, and also the tennis shoe factory, you know, which we've relocated on Navajo. Well, and we've proven that the Navajo workman, you know, does have this, what we call the outstanding ability, you know,
dexterity.
That we feel that regardless how complicated an item is, you know, which may have to be produced at a factory, that the Navajo workmen can do it and can do it even better in certain areas, you know, compared to what is being produced off the reservation. We feel that this is the spot for any industry that might decide to relocate, you know, on in the future. This is the area where they should go and so forth.
We feel that General Dynamics, with the manual dexterity of these girls doing these very complex things.
That's right. We feel that this is the area for it. Not only that, of course, we boast, you know, of our fresh air, you know, the unpolluted air, the scenery, and so forth, you know. A man that wants to go out hiking, you know, out into the hills and commune with nature, you know, be alone, you know, and listen to the chirping of the birds, you know, the singing of the birds and so forth. Really get near what we call nature. This is the place to do it, and still, you know, the person, you know, can tend to other businesses, you know, that he might have. The place to really get unwound is Navajo.
We were with a doctor at Fort Defiance Indian Hospital. He happened to be on a plane with us coming down from Chicago. And so he asked us to look him up. And we had lunch with him yesterday. And he says he's never going to leave the country because he goes horseback riding and all of these wonderful things. And when he finishes it at this hospital, he's going into orthopedic surgery, and he's going to live here because
right
he can.
Here.
And just he proved what you've said. He said this marvelous air, wonderful terrain,
and people.
Well, I can understand that. Right now, let me say we have never had a more wonderful week in our lives than we've had here. Wonderful people, and Well, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I wanted you to know that this doctor over at Fort Defiance goes right along with you. He's from Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. but he says when he's finished his training, this is where he's going to be. He can't leave.
Now, of course, with respect, you know, to this, the development, you know, that we have in mind and so forth, we, of course, are aware, and we're doing what we can, you know, and seeing to it that the air, you know, that we breathe, the nice, clean, fresh air that we have on Navajo remains as such, you know.
Yes,
and we're going to require, of course, the factories that are coming in, those that are producing pollutants and so forth, you know, we want to require those people to put in filters, you know, and help us keep the air clear.
Mr. Clough emphasized that you turned down some good industries because they would not.
That's right. Now, and of course, not only that, we feel that we're proud of our land. We certainly want to keep it as it is, and therefore we're going to have to, I believe, in the future, require, you know, certain things also with respect to the travelers, you know, into our areas and so forth.
Thank you, sir.
And
yeah, we're right.
So these are some of the things that we're thinking of, about, you know, for the Navajo Nation.
Well, that really is a beautiful explanation and expansion of what you say in your speech. And I couldn't ask for any more. Now, Mr. Cannon said he thought that I might give you a copy of a letter that I got from the United States Marine Corps giving me their full cooperation on this book, and he thought that you might like to know that I'm getting their cooperation as well as that of the Navajo Nation.
And then, of course, we might give the Marine Corps a plug here too. You know, all of the different services. Of course, you're going to be doing the book on the Code Talkers.
Yes, that's right.
I think from this, the Navajo has learned, you know, a tremendous amount. It gave them new light of hope, so to speak, into the future as to how the other people, you know, are existing, you know, throughout the world and so forth, and the training that the Marine Corps has given to our people, I think, played an important role, you know, not only in the war fronts, but throughout the world, but also here at home. I think we've gotten a glimmer of hope and a new light of hope, so to speak, you know, which gave us the necessary vision that we needed, you know, to look into the future and see what else there needs to be done, you know, with respect to the benefits, you know, that could be derived from certain things that we've seen throughout the world. See.
One of the Code Talkers, I've forgotten which one that was. No, maybe it was Mr. Link, who said that he felt one of the benefits of World War II, as sad as it was that it made the Navajo so conscious of the fact that he needed to have more education, because only the educated ones could be Code Talkers. And so it really gave a shot in the arm for the rest of the tribe, particularly for families of these men. They said, you must get an education in order to make something of yourself.
That's right. Well, it's sort of a supplemental type of an education. See, of course, they have what we call the informal education.
Oh,
I
yes,
think
that's strong.
That's
yes.
Real rich.
Yes,
there.
It is. And we've felt it since we've been here.
So somehow you need to point that out. See,
it's
in addition to the education, the informal education that they've had, the rich heritage, the culture that the Navajo people have, that somehow or another needed reinforcement of some sort, and of course education comes in there. So.
Mm-hmm. Leading
and
into
of course,
this new 100 years.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Well, now we're not going to keep you. We know how very busy you are. And I'm so glad, Mr. Lincoln, that you came. I thought I was going to get away with you without being here.
But I wonder if you would give me the privilege of taking a picture quickly.
Well, certainly.
I have a bunch to get together again.
Well, Mr. Lincoln, should I take you too before you walk in?
No, I'm not. I'm very full of joy.
Well, thank you for coming in.
that's the way it is with Navajo.
Yes, well, you know, we have been very impressed with the Navajo people and their intelligence.
Yeah.
You know,
you know,
I lack some intelligence.
Yes.
Well, we all do, regardless how well educated a person is, whether
they usually.
They.
Would you mind if my wife comes over there?
No, of course not.
This is a really successful book. You see, it's a nice picture of the author and the head of the nation.
Thank you. Well, I want to express my wholehearted appreciation for the way your people have treated us this week. They have rolled out the red carpet, no matter where we went, and we have never seen such generous, such hospitable people in our lives. And we have, my husband and I, direct tours.
Oh, yeah.
In Chicago, yeah. Well, he's our friend, and he is the one who suggested
that. Got it started.
A reunion in Houston in June,
yes,
the 4th Division.
That's my understanding. Yeah.
And I just might come out and talk to some others. Mm-hmm. But now, you said you were in the 4th Division. When did you start your training? Were you with the first class, the first class of 29, or were you later?
I was later.
You look younger.
Yes. Because, in 41 or, well, around there, 42, I was going to high school in Colorado and youth reservation in Colorado. And of course, I got my deferment. I got my orders to go, and which was my senior year, but then I got my deferment from the draft board to finish my high school. It was in 42, I think.
Then, did you go to Camp Elliott or Camp Pendleton?
We went to San Diego recruit depot,
yes,
there training. Then we went from there to Camp Pendleton.
Yes. And do you remember who your, now what year was that? Was that 42?
That was in, mainly in 43.
43.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then that was after Philip Johnson was there. Did you know Philip Johnson? At all. He is the one.
Yes, he's from, used to be out there in reservation in Arizona.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, he's the one that's headed that Tina. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah. Well, now, was he at Camp Pendleton while you were there? Or
yes, he was there.
He was there in 43. Then after you were shipped out, where did you go?
Well,
where were you sent? For combat.
We went to Marshall Islands. That was our first.
Marshall Islands?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Now, well, I just want you to tell me anything that you can about the way you used,
mm-hmm,
the code. I know.
What happened to Marshall Islands?
What happened to Marshall Islands?
Well, it wasn't much there. It's just a small island that, of course, it wasn't very well fortified, but then it's just a small island that, well, we're supposed to take the airport, which, well, it's already been bombed before, so as much, and there's another island which was have ammunition fortification and officers' quarter, which was more camouflaged than the airport. They got trees there, and, well, that's the one of the division, regiment, 24th, or I guess, 24th went on that side. So we didn't hardly use the communication there.
Mm-hmm.
When we landed there, was already.
Yeah, there was no need for the communication.
No.
Well, did you serve, were you in combat anywhere where you did use it?
Well, from there on, of course, we had our station area over in Hawaii. So we went, after that, we went back to Hawaii. For a training,
what you call a rest camp.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So we went back from there, and of course, that's where we refresh our communication. We go to school there during our rest period.
One of the code talkers told me that they brought in the code talkers from various areas for a refresher course there.
Well, that's when, well, we have four other divisions. They usually bring them in from each division.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
After you were in Hawaii, then did you go back into combat?
And then from there we went back again. We went to what they call Saipan, Mariana Islands.
Yes.
That was in June that year.
Then did you use your communication? Did you use your code there?
Well, we were, of course, I was one of them, and another, my other partner, he used to be he's my cousin, but we were together. But during a convoy, they split us up. Two of us were in sub-chaser, what they call sub-chaser.
Yes.
Of course, we communicated with the ship, the convoy. Well, of course, fortunately, we didn't encounter anything, but we were touched by the roughest part, that being a sub-chaser, sliding small. And
you were in a sub-chaser, but you didn't use your communication?
No,
there.
We were just in contact with our own convoy. And
yes, your own. And so there was not any chance of the Japanese breaking in anyway, so you could just use English.
Uh-huh.
Now, after Saipan, did you go anywhere else?
Well, it's just, there's the two islands there together, we call it Tinian.
Yes.
Of course, it's nearby I guess it's 2.5 miles long, but I guess about 1/2 mile in between the separate islands.
Yes.
That wasn't too hard. I mean, it wasn't too bad at Saipan. We had hills and all that, and to climb. But then, on Saipan, well, it's just mainly 1/4 division and another army unit. There was all that. So, well, we did use a little bit during that. Well, going from that island to the other end. Of course, Tinian is just, I say, is a more flat, more airport there, but then while we're on Saipan, they bombing constantly on that island. So when we hit it, wasn't bad as they expected.
But you had some combat.
Yes, uh-huh.
And then you used the code some there when you
were. Yes, uh-huh.
Saipan.
Well, it's just not too much, but it's just that, well, being in the headquarters of the commander, well, that's, of course, we be on the radios and whatever during the night, all night, so we take turns. Not ourselves, but for the other men that are in communication that runs the radio.
Yes. The total communication crew.
Uh-huh.
Rotated that.
Mm-hmm. So you worked with radio.
Yeah.
I know there was some telephone, it was used on telephone, the code was used on telephone sometimes, when the telephone lines had been set up.
Mm-hmm.
And then there were, when you use radios, tell me how you did it. I read the book, Guadalcanal Diary,
mm-hmm.
and there was one section about how the men put up the, they tied, to the trees, and then they had the generators and so
yes,
forth. Is that the way you did it?
Yes. Uh-huh. It's the same equipment.
The same equipment.
Uh-huh.
Sort of awkward to carry.
Well, yeah, it was heavy to carry. And then, uh-huh.
About 80 pounds, something like that?
Yes.
Was
uh-huh.
it? About 80. Gee. And you had other gear to carry too, didn't you?
Yes.
Yeah,
so, uh-huh. Of course, we try to make it our equipment lighter.
Yes.
Yes. Was there any particular time that you were under stress, I mean real stress, when there was real danger, when the code, you think the code helped?
Well, on Iwo, it did.
Oh, you were in Iwo Jima?
Yes. Uh-huh.
That was the third part that
mm-hmm.
you went to,
mm-hmm.
Iwo Jima.
So, I mean, after Saipan and Tinian Ration, we went back to rest camp in Hawaii again, then after that we left, and it was, of course, it went back. stop at Saipan on the way and then go on. Then from there we get evil. That's what we use that communication.
Yes, it was very important there, I suppose.
Yes. Uh-huh.
That was a mean one, wasn't it? That was a difficult thing.
Yes, it was. Uh-huh.
Everybody we talked to was Iwo Jima, said it was rough.
Yes, Tarawa and Iwo Jima, those are the ones we hear about. Of course, Guadalcanal was not easy either.
Yeah. Well, from Saipan, when this my cousin, we were on a, what do they call, a communication ship, I guess, that the Navy has, I don't recall, it's a small, but then we were on that from there, Saipan to Iwo. We weren't with the troop.
I see.
We were on this
communications group.
Communication. The signal corps, the people.
Well, it's run by the Navy.
Yes.
We were the support on that.
I see. Well, now, can you tell me any particular instance or any battle or about where the code was used, where messages were sent, important messages were sent on Iwo?
Well, it was from our regiment to the headquarters, that's the main thing.
I see, your communications are mostly from your regiment to the headquarters.
Yes, uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, we correspond from the other division. We had 5th Division on our left and the 4th, and the regiment on our side, and there was 3rd Division. We're in the middle, but then we...
Well, I see, you had the 3rd and the 5th on each side of you.
Yes.
One on one side, the other.
We're supposed to go through to take the airport again, and get Iwo.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the 5th was try to go up here and climb at Mount Sorbachi, the mountain.
Yes.
There.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the famous flag was planted.
Yes,
Sorbachi.
Yeah, and then our two regiments were 4th and 5th. They were, well, the Umuwa left way, and the 3rd was somewhere on the other street anyway.
Were the code talkers in the other divisions too?
Yes,
yes. And so that meant that you could communicate with the other regiments,
with
couldn't you?
Divisions, yes.
Where with the other divisions.
Did you did you communicate some with them during the
yes,
combat?
The operation, yes.
Mm-hmm. You remember any of the specific communications that you made?
No.
Hello. Found one fellow that trained thoroughly, but they didn't get in at all.
He didn't get in at all because he was too young and he just came along toward the end.
Yeah.
And so he didn't.
He
got to Hawaii, but that's all.
Do you remember when you were on Iwo Jima? Do you remember any of the specific messages that you had to give? No?
Well, the receiving is well, he said, using his directing. Area, target area where they're going to use a mortar shell and mainly from the ground crew from the ship, from shore to shore.
Yeah.
So you gave the messages connected with this mortar?
Yes, uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember any specific message? Could you quote one, you suppose? Maybe a Navajo, a message that you gave, and then tell us what it meant?
We had one other man do that, and that was very... We liked it very much.
Uh-huh.
He remembered some message that he had to transmit.
Uh-huh.
And he gave it in Navajo and then told us about it.
Wasn't precise, of course, you couldn't remember exactly, but
just
he just said the message. And do you remember any of them?
Well, of course, our quote was called Onendo, I think it was. So, our communication just followed from the headquarters. Call, you want to deliver a message in code. So all I did was write it down. He said, a red area is a target area, red area. We call it Hazan. Our number is so and so, 14. Well, it says, Inzata, that's 14. And then he said, Azawa, Bill, Senado, well, they call the ship from the shore to far in this certain area. So they told us to have the men find it, and that the name. Well, we say it's Naval, but we call it the name is a man.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So the one front line told them, they told them to move back, so they're going to fall into the area. Mm-hmm. That's one of the.
Now, can you? All right, now.
Yeah, you had to move back so you could fire through the area.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Would you say that in a straight line? I mean, just give the message in Navajo. You've done it in pieces, you know. Would you just give it straight along as if you were sending the message?
You just give one message in Navajo.
Well, mostly my wife is receiving.
Yeah.
Well, all right. Yes.
Receiving.
All right. Uh-huh.
So what he said from there was, he said, "Cause I'm the chief, things are to be so he, kudo, nehu dolnik." That's what he said.
Yes, now.
You were on land and you received the message.
We were on a ship.
You were on the ship.
Were on the ship.
I see.
And we communicated to our regiment.
I see. And the regiment wanted you to fire into a certain area.
No, from the commander headquarters.
As the commander headquarters.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's someone, there were some on the ship yet, battleship. Mm-hmm. They wanted to fire to a certain area, so those two Indian boys were on that, so they communicated with the commander, and then from the commander, we got a message from commander to regiment, and we'd communicate.
To the regiment.
To a regiment, which was the front line.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, was that probably your cousin out there, or was he with you?
Well, he was with me.
He was with you.
Uh-huh.
Now, when they, I know that according to the reading that I did in the museum and somewhere, usually they between them up in twos.
Yes, uh-huh.
And if possible, not for instance, you and your cousin, he might be over here and you would be here. He'd be on shore and you'd be on the ship. In this case, you say he was with you on the ship.
Well, we were together all the time.
Yes.
We had, well, he might be on that, the one that you cranked, TBS.
Oh, I see.
Call it,
yes.
And I'll be another one, what they call a walkie-talkie.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So. Communicating with each other then.
Mm-hmm. Now, you didn't, when you wanted to communicate to a Navajo, you didn't say put a Navajo on the
line
or on the radio. You had another word, didn't you?
Yes.
What did you call them?
Well, we all have, as I say, we our communication, the whole communication has certain names.
Well, yes.
Ours was just Orlando.
Orlando.
Uh-huh. But and then if an operator has to be a white person, well, he tell the rest that there'll be message and, well.
If you were asking for a Navajo, what would you say?
Well, they asked for a code talk.
Did you just ask for
yes,
code talk?
Well, when they say they want a message in Indian, well, all we do is just go there.
Oh,
there
they
now.
Would say Indian, would they?
Well, the thing is,
when they called for you, I wondered what term
they
would
for
use.
Now, you said Orlando. Orlando.
That's the station. Certain.
That's a station.
That's a station.
Station.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Yes. Did each? I suppose each one had a different.
Yes.
And a different name.
You were at Orlando.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Do you have any? Do you remember the names of any of the other stations?
Well, I don't recall.
All no. Oh, right. It's all right.
I wouldn't. I would expect 30 years
no,
later.
No,
you to remember
no,
the others, you remember your own.
That's all right.
Down. Now, if you called the station and wanted a Navajo on the other line, because you're going to give a message in code
mm-hmm.
in your Navajo language, what would you ask for?
Well, the one that's on radio happens to come back be a white person. Well, you say a message coming through, you might say Indian language. Well,
that's all. It would just
use Indian language,
just
ordinary communication.
Give me
no special code for that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right, that's, we didn't know whether there was a code or.
We didn't know for sure whether they would say, give it to us in Indian language, or whether they would say Navajo, or mm-hmm. just what they would.
But it'd just be an English message to give, want to talk to us. Mm-hmm. Can you think of any time? Now, I have two instances that I have, one I got directly and one I read about, when our Americans were saved from firing by the Indian Code. And I wonder if you, did anything happen along the line where you feel that the use of the code really saved a regiment or a platoon or anything of the sort?
Well, I guess this, I'll say been numerous. By then, well, and of course I'll say our division, which was mainly the one that spearheaded the thing from 40 regiments, code talkers. We had about 25 boys, and each two divided two regiments, and then that's the way it was.
You had about 25 in the 4th Division.
Something like that, yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, your 4th Division, then, being sort of in the center, was very important in the communications, I presume.
Yes, as far as 4th Division was concerned,
mm-hmm.
yes.
Mm-hmm. Because you had the 3rd and the 5th on each side of you, didn't you?
Well,
in the one situation,
yeah.
The Iwa.
That was
like that. That's
but
what
not
I think.
Not always.
This mm-hmm.
just
I was thinking of Iwo.
Yeah,
Iwo Jima. Mm-hmm. So that made it especially important, didn't it? Mm-hmm.
And now, I've heard about this, for instance, this is one situation where there was a landing party,
mm-hmm.
and as they pushed on, they pushed the Japanese back, and so but from the ship they were still firing where our people had been, and so they were afraid of casualties here.
Where the Japanese had been and our people had moved.
Well,
yeah.
No, they were firing exactly where our men had. Where they were, and so they sent a message back to the ship that they had pushed the Japanese back and don't keep firing here because you're firing on our lines.
Mm-hmm.
And they wouldn't believe it. They kept firing, and finally they said, "Is there a Navajo there?" And they said, "Yes." So the Navajos got together. And the Navajo said, "You are firing on our lines," and so the artillery then began to lob over where the Japanese were.
Then they knew
it
wasn't the Japanese.
And it saved all of these
yeah,
American men. And I wonder if you could think of a similar situation when something like that happened.
Well, as I said, ours was kind of, I say, was more fortunate than others. Of course, those others that were in other divisions, of course, they had similar experience like that.
But yours was not, there wasn't anything quite like that.
No.
Uh-huh.
Was your division more of sort of a coordinating division for the whole,
yes.
For both other divisions?
Those that are, well.
Well, now the 4th Division, he said they were supposed to take the airport, weren't you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but they were in the center. This is
yeah,
the
they were
I was
in the center,
asking.
And then the
if they didn't work both with, you see, both sides, work with the 5th and the 3rd
yes,
Division.
That's right.
And the communications in the center became rather important
yes.
in
yes,
coordinating the 5th with the 3rd, you see.
Yes.
Well, that's, and then Iwo, well, that's, we had 4th and 5th there. But
yes.
Then we had a 3rd Marine Division, but they were just staying by.
Oh, 3rd was standing by.
In case.
By.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I see.
Mm-hmm.
So just the 4th and 5th then that were working. You were working toward the airport, and the 5th toward the hill.
Yes,
so
we're supposed to make a sweep there, and then all we
mm-hmm.
were together. So,
mm-hmm.
Which they hadn't indicated, but then, of course, we were not sure for what, I guess, a couple of days, I guess, before we could make a move to the
mm-hmm.
airport.
Well, I was reading one article, actually, it came out in the Honolulu Advertiser in 1945,
mm-hmm.
and by a very well-known reporter who had been watching everything and reporting back. He said that he felt that if it had not been for the Navajo Code,
mm-hmm.
that the outcome of the war would have been very different.
Yes.
he felt that it had been the turning point. And I asked one of the code talkers how he felt. He said, "Oh, I don't think so." And I asked another one. He said, 100%. As far as I'm concerned, I think that if the outcome of the war would have been very different if it hadn't been for the use of the code.
So the two men disagreed.
Yeah. Now, so how do you feel? It was very important.
Well, to me, it was.
Yes.
Of course, unfortunately, we can't get the main ones from division to Chicago, but then it's very few they went. So on their part, we think it was important.
Did you do quite a lot of reminiscing about your experiences when you were with the fellows in Chicago?
Yes, uh-huh.
You see,
of course, it's, as I say, it's just very few went from this one.
Yes,
that's true.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we found that there's Frank Toledo, who has been in Albuquerque, has been released from the hospital after surgery. I had hoped to talk to him today. Well, I'm glad he's well enough to go home.
Uh-huh.
But they are scattered. I think he lives at Cuba, and another one lives at Crystal, and so forth. And I couldn't just run around and get a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
But when I finish, now I have everything for the whole book, excepting there's one chapter I thought I would just devote to personal experiences of the code talkers and exactly how they used it. And if I find I don't have quite enough to satisfy my publisher, then I just may run down to Houston and see if we can't get a group of the code talkers together and just let them reminisce and talk across a table or something. And
uh-huh.
And maybe that way one man would remind another of something that happened in the use of the code. Sometime when you're just alone and trying to think of it.
We'd hoped that we could get about two or three code talkers together,
mm-hmm.
so talk with each other and remind one another. But instead, we've had one code talker at a time.
At a time.
So, mm-hmm. Because they're always in different situations.
But I would say you've been the most helpful of them all.
Well, that's what we had intended, that we might put a demonstration out there when they inform us that we were from Chicago, but then it was we never have a chance. I mean, something like that, that from our Indian group, that we might put on whatever we did over there, but then, of course, they didn't have the material, nothing there, so we just went according to their schedule.
Yes. But it was an exciting thing, wasn't it?
Yeah.
In Chicago.
Uh-huh.
I've read so much about it, and and of course, I've seen the medallions, and Mr. Cannon gave me one of the little silver miniatures.
Oh, uh-huh.
And then he gave me a picture of...
You're right on.
Oh, yes. He gave me...
I noticed that.
I didn't notice it.
Every Navajo code talker ought to have one of those. While you were in combat, were there any particular time that you really got scared?
Maybe we shouldn't ask him.
Oh, I don't think he minds that, do you?
I didn't. To me, if you're going to get it, that's about it. So,
uh-huh.
Of course, there's one was in Saipan when we were about halfway. Of course, we expect we cornered the soldiers that end. That evening, so we all knew that they were going to start infiltration backwards.
Yes.
That was the only night that, of course I wasn't scared myself, but then...
But you were nervous about it. Pretty alert.
The main thing was they had a cornfield just right there, and a road here. So we just made a foxhole along there. But, we expected that. So then, I was around about midnight, 1 o'clock, I guess. But then we had one of the fellow. He was a white boy. Of course, unfortunately, he was one of the scariest one. But then he went and dug his foxhole right by the road. So, I guess around about 12:30, those started coming in. Civilian soldiers all through, I guess. Happens to be two, three soldiers there, but when he made a move, they just jumped on him and stabbed him with a sword. But that's probably the worst part, that I guess I'll fight serve for it boy.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think there is something about the Navajo Indian.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's maybe stronger and less afraid.
Yeah.
He's better conditioned to danger than some of the white
people. Physically, he is.
Well, you've lived closer to nature.
Yeah.
And there's always a certain amount of danger.
Yes.
As well as pleasure when you are close to nature.
Well, I guess we got to experience, as I say, like just make yourself at home on the ground like that, and then way more used to it.
That's right.
Yes, and then of course they threw hand grenades there, here and there, but then we're just flat on the ground, and then we didn't feel it. I mean, just a little small shrapnel, I guess, hit here with my boot, but then I didn't feel it.
Mm-hmm.
The small ones, and the next day it kind of a little pain, but there's no blood in here, nothing. It's just the small one that same does it. You kind of had the pain in there.
Mm-hmm.
So I took my shoes off and I said, well, I must have got it, I guess, somewhere around there. But then, to tell you the truth, well, I don't know, it's about maybe when I got out of the service and those things came back out.
Oh,
small things and
shrapnel that got in, and then but
it
worked out.
It worked out. So it was the small out. Ones, I guess.
Uh-huh.
And then so
well, you know, Mr. Thompson, Frank Thompson. We asked my husband asked him this. He said the small fire didn't bother him at all.
Yeah.
They could just shoot and it didn't bother him.
Yeah.
But when the big bombs fell and
yeah.
the earth began to shake, he said,
yeah,
he said
well,
then I began to tremble.
Yeah. Well. What did I say? It is, of course, the nearest one that we, of course, were in the foxhole when we hit Saipan. Of course, you had to look up there, of course, we're down here. So
yes.
When he made the landing, and of course, one of the motor, I guess, and of course, he hit, I guess, from here to the street there, but we're already in the foxhole with the Japanese Jews, I guess, and we set up communication there. But there wasn't all of us, white and all, and the ones that were in the communication group there, we tried to set up our communication there. But then suddenly a shrapnel hit on the side, but then of course we were all diving. And fortunately, the shrapnel didn't hit our radio.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first call we got in.
The Japanese were up on the hill where they.
But yes, and of course it's the hill.
Yeah,
the landing. They don't know when we got on top. There, we knew how it is on down there.
Yeah.
Everything coming in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But you were able to. Did you use your communication even in the foxhole?
Well, not in an Indian language. No, it's just regular routine.
Yes.
Just our.
You alternated. You used the regular routine part of the time and the other.
Yeah, well, that was we called. Yeah, it was, we get really matched in English too. So well.
Yeah. Did you?
Not that. It wasn't too important that they just right.
No, it just
the accuracy.
Yeah. Did you use the Morse code any?
Well, not to a certain extent.
There were some who did.
Mainly are those white operators that.
They did that most.
Now I think.